I'm responsible for all those people aboard my jet, all the passengers, the crew, the cabin crew, their safety. I mean, they're up out of their seats more than they're sitting down. And so I'm constantly thinking about what is happening with my cabin crew, the passengers.
Hi, I'm Paul. In this episode, I'll be speaking with the airline pilot guy, Captain Jeff, aka Jeff Nielsen. Now, Jeff has made aviation his life. He flew in the U.S. Air Force. He's been an airline pilot for over 3 decades, long enough that most of the planes he's flown in have been retired. So what does adventure flying mean to him?
I'll just click everything off earlier in the flight, you know, coming in for an arrival, just to kind of fly, because I like flying. I mean, I really love the feel of the controls and, hey, look, you know, I turn or move the yoke this direction and the airplane responds to it. And I just love that feeling of flying the airplane.
Jeff began recording the Airline Pilot Guy podcast over 15 years ago in a Memphis hotel room. Today, that podcast has a worldwide audience of aviation fans who want nothing more than to just understand what it's like to live a life as, well, a guy who's an airline pilot.
I feel like I've had such a great career flying and so many great experiences and so many great adventures that I'd be, I would be okay with that if somebody told me, you know what, that's it. That last flight that you flew, that's it.
This is the story of how Captain Jeff fell in love with flying, from the smell of jet fuel to flying inverted. These are the adventures he remembers the most and what adventure flying really means to him. This is Adventure Flying. As an airline pilot, you have, take me to there, are you 30 years now in? I think you said you're on your 30th year or?
Yeah, I just crossed over 32 in December.
Yeah. So, wow.
In my 33rd year of airline flying. And before that, I was an Air Force pilot. So that's how I really got my flight training through the U.S. Air Force. And so I went through Auburn University with a degree in aviation management, but I did not do any of I think they call it the professional flight option. I didn't do any of the flying there because I had a feeling that I was going to go into the military and I knew that they were going to train me regardless of what I had going in. So that's what I did. Went a couple of weeks after graduation from Auburn University, I was raising my right hand and, you know, swearing my allegiance to the country and the Constitution and all that kind of stuff, and went down to San Antonio, Texas, officer training school. But because I did not have a private certificate, I had to go through something they called the flight screening program. And so I did that for about 3 weeks or so. It's about a 14-hour program, like a miniature undergraduate pilot training program, UPT. And they put us on a school bus every day, head us out over to Hondo, Texas, in the middle of Central Texas, I guess, and put us in a T-41 Mescalero, which is basically the military version of the Cessna 172, and did that program.
You started in Auburn, you're in aviation management, and then you went right into the Air Force, and now you've been in the airlines for 30-plus years.
Yeah.
Did you make up your mind when you were 6 years old you were going to take to the skies? Was your dad a pilot? Was there anybody in the family? What kind of set you on this trajectory of being a pilot seemingly from, you know, your teenage years on?
Well, it was before my teenage years. Ever since I was, you know, I don't know what they say, knee high to a grasshopper. Not sure exactly what that means, but anyway, young, you know, I'd look up in the sky and look at airplanes and, you know, the family would go to Los Angeles International. I grew up in Southern California. LAX to, you know, pick up family members and friends and that kind of stuff. And I just fell in love with the smell of burnt jet fuel and just the whole idea of getting in one of these fantastic machines and traveling the world and, you know, living the glamorous lifestyle of an airline pilot at some point. And, so yeah, I just fell in love with flying and watched, what was it called? The British sci-fi puppet show, I think they call it Thunderbirds.
Oh, sure.
And I was watching, you know, watch that all the time. And I'd be with whatever diecast model or paper airplane that I created myself. And I'd be, you know, in the backyard flying this stupid little thing around. No, it's not stupid, but, you know, I was in my own little world flying airplanes. And so I kind of knew that I wanted to be a pilot. And I kind of consider myself really fortunate that I knew from really early on that that's what I wanted to do for a living, was fly airplanes. So
why is it just the jet fuel, the smell? Every pilot I talk to always talks about the smell. It's so funny. People love the smell of a moldy old plane, but, but I mean, that's the tip of the iceberg, right? But was it the adventure proprietary in aviation for you? Did you just like the feeling of looking down?
What, my dad worked in the aerospace industry. So that my, you know, I didn't have any flying in my background at all. Nobody was a pilot, but he did work in the aerospace industry. And I think one of the events that his company, North American, did, or North American Rockwell at that time, I don't know if they had merged, was like this tour. The 707 was like brand new, and they were bringing in people from the company to LAX to board one of these 707s and go on a local tour of LA, Long Beach, you know, Southern California. I think maybe a 45-minute flight, something like that. And that was just awesome. You know, that was like, I'm hooked. I want to fly airplanes for a living. Now, I did, you know, I mentioned I really got my training in the military. But before that, I worked at FBO's, Fixed Base Operations, Mobile Air Center, and worked the line, you know, as a lineman or line boy or whatever they called us. Just wanting to be around anything to do with flying and airplanes and talking to pilots and that kind of thing. And one of my fellow linemen at the FBO was a CFI. So I'd go up with him every now and then and take a, you know, quote, lesson with him and put that in my logbook and that kind of thing, Cessna 150 and all that kind of stuff. So, but I didn't, I only got maybe, I think when I went off to, San Antonio for officer training school and the flight screening program, I may have had 5 hours in my logbook, not a lot of time. So, at Hondo, in the flight screening program, that's when I actually soloed for the first time. And it was such a streamlined program. And, you know, like, this is what, you know, at this point you do this. And it was kind of almost a letdown. But I do remember the solo flight, but there wasn't really anything extra special about it. But when I went through undergraduate pilot training and the T-37, when I first soloed that, and the T-38, that was a much bigger thing. You're in a squadron, they all grab you and throw you into the dunk tank and the whole bit. So there's a lot of kind of ritual and ceremony over that kind of thing. But
was that the first taste of adventure for you, though? It sounds like the Air Force, not necessarily the dunk tank, right? But it sounds like you, that's really where, you know, you've had this kind of curiosity towards aviation and you just kind of keep itching that scratch. And then it sounds like you get to the Air Force, you start flying in the squadron. And that's why that was the moment where you're like, oh, yeah, that this is why I've been so interested in this.
Yeah, not the dunk tank in particular.
Yeah, right.
The actual airplane. When you're flying a jet, and as I said, I didn't have a lot of experience flying any airplane at all, actually, by the time I was sitting, you know, as a student in the T-37, which was a side-by-side. I don't have to explain this now because it's such an old airplane. It's been retired. Almost every single airplane that I've flown, by the way, has been retired, which is sad.
But you're not retired yet. You've stood the test of time. There you go.
So, but soon, I'm 62, so I have a little less than 3 years to go for mandatory retirement, at least airline retirement. So, so adventure. Adventure for me was like getting up in that Cessna 150 with my fellow linemen and remembering just, grabbing the yoke so hard that I looked down at my hands and, you know, white knuckles. That's, I guess, where they get that term. Just being exhilarated about being in an airplane and I'm actually controlling it and looking down at everything under, you know, underneath us. And in the Air Force, flying the T-37 for the first time and in the weather and formation flying and acrobatics or aerobatics. It's just every flight was an adventure. And then, of course, the T-38, that was the supersonic trainer, which actually they're still flying. I think they're in the process of retiring that soon. But a supersonic jet trainer, I remember going out, walking out to the flight line for the first time by myself, solo, thinking to myself, oh no, you know, there's nobody here to kind of make sure that everything's working properly. And it's really important that you check certain things on a high performance trainer like the T-38 Talon. Like when you go into afterburner, you know, you have to look for a couple of swings of the burner cans, and you have to look at a minimum acceleration, you know, by this point in your takeoff roll and everything else. So it's very, very exhilarating. Great flying. I mean, excitement, adventure, getting up and flying four-ship formation in the T-38. And then we used to do something called extended trail, which is kind of like combat fighter maneuvering, sort of, and where the lead will go and start a loop or a barrel roll or some kind of an aerobatic maneuver. And if you're number three or number four in that four-ship formation, let me tell you what, it is exciting, exhilarating, and like you're thinking to yourself when you get back down on the ground, how did I make it through that without killing myself? So it's pilot training was just a kick in the pants. Very, very exhilarating. Lots of adventure. Of course, your goal is to make it all the way through, get those wings, and then go on to your first assignment. And then again, another adventure, learning a new airplane, a new type of mission. I flew C-141 Starlifters out at Travis Air Force Base in Northern California. And before that, of course, I had to go to Altus, Oklahoma, lovely place, to learn how to fly the C-141B. And, you know, I was just excited to fly an airplane like that, that was going to take me around the world to places that I've heard about, even places I've never heard about, and just see them for myself. Did a lot of flying out in the Pacific because I was based on the West Coast. So, that was a lot of fun and a lot of adventure, going to places like New Zealand, Australia, Pango Pango, American Samoa. I had no idea that that was an American territory. It's a little Polynesian island out in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. Beautiful place, grass huts, and all. It's a pretty amazing place. The Philippines, out to an atoll out in the middle of the Indian Ocean, Diego Garcia, Navy base in the British, what do they call that? The British Ocean Territories, I believe. Going up to Oman to, you know, help supply the fleet, the Navy fleet, which I don't recall what number it was at the time. And, yeah, just flying all over the world. You know, the things that you read about, in history and, in school, it comes to life, and it's just, again, adventure. So
are you seeing most of these places in the C-141, you're saying? Are you, mm-hmm. you're flying into bases in these areas or... When yep. you're going to these places, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so your base, it's kind of like airline flying, and your base mm-hmm. in one place, in my case, Travis, which was in the Sacramento Valley between Sacramento and between the Bay Area. And then you go out on a trip, and these trips are a little bit longer than a typical airline trip. You know, they're on average, I think, about 7 days, 5 to 7 days, sometimes as long as 16 days if you did a double Diego, which... again, involved making it all the way out through the Malaccan Strait and out over the Indian Ocean to Diego Garcia and a beautiful little atoll out in the middle of nowhere. You know, beautiful place, lots of good memories.
Yeah, I want to touch on this. I also want to step back a little bit to your Air Force training still. Do sure. you, like what you mentioned was, I mean, that's what flying's all about, the four-ship flying, the... Mm-hmm. You know, going up and feeling the adrenaline of flying in an airplane that you're flying by hand because that's how it was, or, you know, and mm-hmm. in some cases still is with the aircraft that are, you know, still in service, as you mentioned. Right. What's your understanding today of the Air Force, right? Like, do you feel like is the purity, is some of it still gone because, you know, the fly-by-wire and the, you know, obviously drones and what have you, right? Do you have any insight or into what it would be like today for some, like if you were to go into the Air Force today, how do you think that experience would be versus what you experienced? Do you have any insight into that?
Well, when I talk to fellow pilots that are, you know, a generation or two younger than myself, and they've come through that military training background or Air Force training specifically, yeah, was considerably different kind of training than what I did. And they are telling me, oh yeah, but I have a friend or a guy that his son is going through or daughter is going through training right now. And let me tell you what they're doing now, you know, so it's constantly changing. I don't know the specifics of it, but I can say that it's much more aligned to the modern way of flying and automation and advanced cockpit displays and that kind of thing. All the airplanes that I flew other than the C-141 didn't have autopilots. It was all manual flying and all old school. And I'm not sure if that's the way it still is in the Air Force, but I suspect that there's a lot more automation going on and a lot less hand flying. Again, I could be wrong about that. I do know that it wasn't long after I graduated from pilot training, or actually left the Air Force at the end of 1988, that they, I think at sometime in the 90s, went from the kind of training that I went through, where everybody went through T-37s and T-38s, to a dual track style of training where everybody goes through the basic training of the T-37, or I guess now it's the T-6 turboprop. Once you reach that, the end of that basic part of your training, then depending on what airplane that they think you're best suited for, you'll go to whatever that track would be. So if you're going to be flying the fast jets and, you know, the fighter attack reconnaissance type of jets, then they're going to put you through the T-38 or whatever it's going to be in the future. If you're going to fly something like the C-141 transport, well, you can't do that anymore because that's retired. the C-17 or a tanker or a bomber or whatever, then you go through a different type of training on like a little business jet, it was a Mitsubishi Diamond Jet, then the Beach Jet. And I think I just heard from somebody that they're talking about, you know, stopping that program and doing something else. And I'm not even sure what that's going to be. But so things have changed. Yeah.
You've flown for an airline 30 plus years now. Were there times where you were, you know, flying now as an airline pilot where you directly use that Air Force training that you can remember succinctly or directly? I mean, is it every day?
I think that as far as the value and the greatest thing that I took away from my military training, not so much what I did at Hondo in the T-41, but more in the T-37 and T-38, where unusual attitudes was a way of life. I mean, almost every flight you went on, you were drilled in, you know, how to recover from an unusual attitude and doing aerobatics and formation flying. The airplane's upside down and which way is up, I don't know. It doesn't matter because I have my eyes, you know, fixated upon the lead airplane. And you experience that feeling of an airplane that's in a really unusual attitude. And that's the thing that is most valuable about my military training, is that knowing how, you know, what that feels like and how to get out of that and return an airplane to, you know, stabilized flight. But the other thing is all of the training that I had and experience hand flying airplanes is still, you know, it goes through to what I'm doing every day as an airline pilot. Although in this world of flying airliners, it's mostly automation. But there are times when we still hand fly the airplane, you know, for takeoffs and most landings. And sometimes I'll just click everything off earlier in the flight, you know, coming in for an arrival, just to kind of fly, because I like flying. I mean, I really love the feel of the controls. And hey, look, you know, I turn or move the yoke this direction and the airplane responds to it. And I just love that feeling of flying the airplane. And the airplane that I fly now, the Boeing 717, which is basically the latest, most modern iteration of the DC-9, is, you know, cables going out to little control tabs that are actually moving the controls. Not much different than the Icon A5. I'm sure the flight control system on that is cables and moving actual control surfaces. And so when you are activating the controls on that airplane, you're feeling what the air is doing to the controls and what the, you know, what you're doing and how it's affecting the way the aircraft is moving. And that to me is the essence of flying. And I try to do it as much as I can without making my co-pilot nervous, because, you know, usually many or most of the people that I fly with are much younger than myself, and they're used to a much more automated world than I am. And I just get a kick out of hand flying an airplane.
Do you feel like you're hand flying the plane more than most people? I mean, it's tough for you to say, right? But would you, just based on your experience, you're flying with younger pilots.
I never try to look over and see the facial expressions
when, sure, sure.
When I turn off an airplane, you know, turn off the automation and start hand flying an airplane. I just, you know, most of the time, actually, I'm surprised that many times, you know, like after we get to our layover and we're at the bar debriefing, you know, having a beer or whatever, you know, I'm surprised a lot by, you know, hearing from people that I fly with that they're happy to see that people still exist like me that like hand flying the airplane. And they said, you know, sometimes it's intimidating to do it when you're flying with somebody who is, you know, always has the automation hooked up and everything else. And they say it's kind of refreshing to fly with somebody like me, and they feel like they can turn everything off and hand fly the airplane. And even the FAA and the NTSB for years have been saying, look, we as airline pilots need to practice manual flying skills, because, you know, that's kind of one of the number one causes of many serious aviation accidents in the last decade or two. And even our company has memos that say, hey, if it's appropriate, you know, if it's a nice day, the weather is decent, you know, consider turning off the automation, manually flying the airplane, because, you know, you got to remember how to do that. That's a skill that you'll lose if you don't practice it. So.
Mm. What's a day like for you as an airline pilot? And the reason I ask is because I, you know, for me, you know, just listening to you, a pilot who's been doing this 30 plus years, part of that has to feel automated in and of itself, right? Like, what is still fun about, there's fun flying the airplane, right? But is it still mm-hmm. fun for you and adventurous to be an airline pilot?
So the kind, you know, one of the great things, especially flying for one of the major legacy airlines, is that, you know, we have a diversified fleet of aircraft. So we have, I'm flying basically the smallest aircraft in our fleet, or one of the smallest, as opposed to flying, and I could fly captain on one of the big, you know, wide bodies that do all the long haul international stuff. But I like, you know, as I mentioned, I like flying the airplane and getting a lot of takeoffs and landings. So, you know, you're flying a smaller airplane, you're flying smaller segments. And that means you're going to fly, you know, in a typical day for me, three flights a day is kind of standard, three or four flights a day. And so, you know, you're going to get a couple of takeoffs and landings out of it every single day of your trip. Now, if I were flying the long haul stuff, which is exciting in its own way, an adventure in its own way, you know, you go into places around the world that maybe you've never been and experiencing the culture and all that kind of thing. However, you're flying with a bunch of other pilots and everybody's got to get their three takeoffs and landings every 90 days, or else they lose their currency. And, you know, sometimes on those kind of trips, you know, you fly one leg over and you're there for 24 hours and then one leg back. And there's a chance that you'll never even touch the controls. You might be sitting in the seat, you know, during cruise flight or whatever, but, you know, it's a different world. So I just really enjoy the kind of mission, I guess, in a kind of, to use a military term, the kind of flying that we do in the Boeing 717, and doing those short little flight segments, you know, flying early in the day. But to answer your question about, okay, well, is it automated, as far as, you know, your day, is it all the same, you know, and you're going a lot of the same destinations? Yes. The thing that makes it different and exciting and adventurous every single day or every single trip, regardless of whether you're doing the same trip or not, is weather. Weather changes everything. So one day with beautiful weather, the next day you're fighting thunderstorms, or maybe you're flying in the wintertime with, you know, low visibility approaches and that sort of thing. That's what always makes it an adventure for most of us flying in the airline world. Weather is the thing.
And for you, I mean, describe that adventure, though. Is that adventure exciting? Is it just keeps you on your toes and allows it to not feel static? Like, obviously, you'd have to take weather very seriously because it has its hazards. But what does adventure mean to you as an airline pilot now?
Well, you know, that, you know, when you think of adventure, you know, you look it up in the dictionary, it's usually has something to do with danger or risk or whatever. And, you know, I guess in a certain way, flying in various weather conditions is more risky than flying in beautiful weather, maybe more dangerous. You know, I wouldn't say dangerous, but, you know, more adventurous. There have been times that, you know, we get on the ground after flying through a weather system and you're thinking to yourself, I never want to do that again. I always tell people I love thunderstorms when I'm sitting at home on my front porch, looking up at the thunderstorms and the lightning and everything else, thinking to myself, thank God I'm not up there having to fly through that or around it or whatever. Yeah. So there have been many times, through all types of weather that you experience where you just think to yourself, yeah, that was not a lot of fun. I don't want to do that again anytime soon. And then you move on. You know, you don't think about it beyond that. You don't dwell on it.
How do you approach adventure as an airline pilot? From a passenger's perspective, adventure is usually turbulence or bad weather. How do you think of these elements as a pilot, as an airplane pilot, outside of just trying to avoid them at all cost?
Okay, so to be honest, these airplanes are, they can handle much, much more turbulence than would be comfortable for anyone. They can, you know, handle weather systems, you know, pretty severe systems. The thing, though, that makes it a concern for pilots, especially captains, is that I'm responsible for all those people aboard my jet, all the passengers, the crew, the cabin crew, their safety. I mean, they're up out of their seats more than they're sitting down. And so I'm constantly thinking about what is happening with my cabin crew. Are they up with the carts, that kind of thing? The passengers, you know, is the seatbelt light on? Is it off? Are they in their seats with their seatbelts fastened? What do they feel? You know, I try to put myself, and that's the tough thing for me, and the thing that makes it stressful as far as weather is concerned, is I try to imagine myself sitting back there in seat, you know, 13A, feeling the airplane really get jostled about, and knowing that they probably have some level of anxiety. And that's the thing that makes me anxious, because I kind of, I don't know, I feel like I'm feeling what my passengers are feeling. And so that's why I go out of my way to try to make sure that, you know, I give weather systems a wide berth, try to think about, you know, where is that turbulence going to be? It's going to be downwind of that storm. You know, what are the winds up here? They're 50 knots. So, you know, if I have to deviate around a thunderstorm, I'm going to try to deviate upwind if I can. If I can't, then I have to make sure I have sufficient distance so that the effects of that thunderstorm and the winds going around it don't jostle the airplane around. And that's, you know, turbulence. That's what freaks everybody out. Now, if you're flying at night and you're flying around thunderstorms and the lightning is flashing and lighting up the inside of the airplane cabin, you know, that kind of makes people anxious as well. Most of the time, the kind of flying that I'm doing is daylight flying. So it's the turbulence that really kind of freaks people out. And it's easy for you to say, well, you know, the airplane can really handle a lot more than this. And the most dangerous thing about turbulence is if you're not in your seat with your seatbelt on and, you know, attached to the airplane. But that doesn't mean anything to most people. It's just like, no, I mean, this thing, this room that I'm in, this tube that I'm in is really shaking and it's scaring the, you know what, out of me. And so that's the thing that makes it stressful for me and why I try hard to, you know, try to avoid those situations as much as I can. But, you know, we're coming up on that time of year in the spring here. I was actually looking at the weather for my trip that I'm supposed to leave on tomorrow and looking at the thunderstorm systems and everything else and thinking, okay, this is going to be a factor for my flight tomorrow from Atlanta to Houston. And so, you know, I'm already thinking about it, thinking about all the different days of my trip and what kind of weather systems are out there and how I'm going to work through this with my dispatcher as far as, you know, getting an optimized route and, you know, avoiding the severe weather systems as much as we can.
Do you have an opinion or I'm sure you get asked a lot, like, I want to start in aviation. What do you recommend, right? But do you have an opinion on burnout, or how do you keep aviation exciting, to keep it adventurous and to keep flying fun? Or how have you over 30 years? Is it just in your DNA, you think? Or do you think about other jobs you could have? What's your perspective overall, just as an airline pilot in that regard?
Well, I think part of it is part in your DNA, perhaps, or, you know, your general makeup. I have met people, you know, even, I mean, I remember early on in my aviation or my airline career, flying with people that clearly were not happy about doing this job, but they figured, well, you know, it pays well and gives me a bunch of days off, so I'll do it. But they were, you know, like driving the airplane like a station wagon. You know, it's like not really paying close attention to the craft of flying. And I always wanted to tell people like that, you know, maybe you should look at getting out of this and doing something maybe you'd enjoy doing. But luckily, few and far between as far as the people like that that I ran into. Most of us have this this passion for flying. But, you know, after a few decades, it does kind of start feeling like, okay, you know, my passion is waning a little bit and it's just another job kind of thing. But honestly, for me, I think one of the best things has been starting this podcast, because what this podcast did was open my eyes to all the people out there who, I mean, would give their right arm or some other body part just to be able to do what I do for a living and that so many of us take for granted. And I just, you could hear the excitement in people's voices or their emails sent and their questions asked. And then I got a chance to actually learn about aspects of aviation that I knew nothing about. I mean, people are writing me in about, you know, PC simming and the extent to which people are getting involved with that, and like the air traffic control services live, real time. You know, people are flying around doing all these things, flying for virtual airlines or whatever. And I'm thinking, whoa, I didn't know that was out there. It's plane spotters and RC modelers and just so many people that are just so excited about aviation and all the different aspects of it. It really opened up a whole new world for me. And I learn probably more from my listeners than I do. Than they do from me. It gives me a chance to kind of, I mean, it's been a great career. I mean, a great Air Force career, a great airline career. I've never been furloughed. I've had some, you know, stagnation in my career progression, but overall, I mean, I can't complain about any of it. And so being able to give back by sharing my life and the life of my co-hosts with the people in the public, that just eat, drink, sleep this flying stuff is just amazing to me. And it's my way of giving back. And it really, really gives me great pleasure. And it keeps me going. It keeps stoking my passion for aviation. And the cool thing about it, Paul, is that after I am forced to retire from the airlines in, you know, just under 3 years, that's not going to be the end of aviation. I don't plan on stopping podcasting. There's so many things out there to talk about and sharing my experience and all that I'm going to do this probably until, you know, somebody takes my microphone away or I don't, you know. So
is there anything you've learned about recently or just in general about aviation or aerospace that you're excited about in particular, like a specific thing or just overall the unknown?
Let me tell you, the thing that excites me the most in aviation is stuff that happened long before I was born or when I was a little kid. And we talked about this a little bit before today's recording. the fact that I'm just infatuated with flying boats. And then, you know, when you said, you know, Icon A5, you ever heard of that? Oh yeah, I definitely have heard of that. I mean, I've always thought that the idea, the dream of flying a flying boat would be just like the pinnacle for me. And I mean, talking about adventure, you know, when I was a kid growing up in Southern California, on occasion we'd go over to Catalina Island and, you know, being in Avalon Bay and watching the Avalon Air Transport, you know, Mother Goose, four engine Sikorsky flying boat come in, and or amphibian, I guess, come in and land in the harbor was just, wow. I mean, that it doesn't get any better than that. And then one of my co-hosts, Captain Nick, he does these things every episode called Plane Tales. And one of them, several episodes back, was about this Boeing 314 Pacific Clipper, Captain Robert Ford, heading out to Hawaii and then leaving Hawaii and heading down toward, I think, eventually New Zealand or Australia. And after they left the Hawaii, Pearl Harbor was attacked by the Japanese, and it threw us into World War II. And the fact that this whole story, there was a book written by Ed Dover called The Long Way Home, where this crew was tasked with flying this airplane, getting it back to New York. However, they're not allowed to go the way they came. They have to keep going around the world, the long way around, and just going to places that they'd never been before, and going to libraries and looking at atlases and trying to remember their, you know, their education about geography and how to make a path around that part of the world that nobody had been. I mean, just, that's, to me, that's adventure. That's exciting. And so, you know, getting to fly at some point, the Icon A5 is going to be like one of the pinnacles for me, you know, just flying, flying an amphibian and landing on water. That's just so cool to me.
Have you thought about, or do you, you know, kind of get nostalgic about what that last flight, that last commercial flight might feel like to you? And if so, do you think it might just be like, let's just close this chapter, on to the next one? Or do you view that as being something pretty emotional? Do you think about that? Have you talked to other pilots about their last flight? I guess just take me into your thought process there, if you have any thoughts about what that might be like for you. 32 years of flying kind of condensed all into one last one.
Yeah. I have a doctor's appointment today. And if that doctor said, you know, Jeff, we found something that is pretty serious going on with you, and unfortunately, I don't think you're going to be able to ever, you know, fly again. We're going to have to, you know, take away your medical certificate. I would be disappointed, but I wouldn't be, not as much as you'd think. I feel like I've had such a great career flying and so many great experiences and so many great adventures that I'd be, not happy. I would be okay with that. If somebody told me, you know what, that's it, that last flight that you flew, that's it. As far as being emotional about it, I think that if I actually have an organized, you know, last flight, and I'm sure that many of my good friends and, you know, trusty, loyal listeners will probably want to be on that and celebrate it and everything else, that will be what makes it emotional for me, seeing their emotion for, you know, for me and the fact that I'm going through this and all that kind of thing. But I don't think I'm going to be that emotional about it. I mean, I could be completely wrong, but I feel like I've had such a great flying career already that if that last trip that I flew, you know, a couple of weeks ago, if that's it, well, that's it. It's been good. It's been a good life.
So yeah, if you have a moment, check out Jeff's podcast, the Airline Pilot Guy podcast. It's everywhere podcasts are. I really recommend it. It's fun. It's very informative. It covers a lot of different facets of the airline industry, or just aviation as a whole. Take a moment here. This is how Jeff explains the podcast to new and prospective listeners.
If people are interested in flying, and you don't have to be a professional airline pilot to listen to my show. In fact, I would say that the minority of listeners are people that are flying professionally. Most of the people, I believe, that listen to our show are people that are just, you know, super aviation geeks, aviation enthusiasts, and who want to kind of feel like they can live the life that we live through us. And it's a great place, a great community. I mean, I never envisioned what this thing has grown into. I mean, I was just a guy that had a microphone and a recorder and a laptop computer in a hotel room in Memphis, Tennessee, my first episode. Just I'm thinking, like, who is going to want to listen to me talk about whatever I'm talking about? And from that point, you know, just a few listeners and few downloads and that kind of thing, to the community that has grown around this thing that's worldwide, that is just, and I mention it all the time on our show, it's not the podcast, it's the community. That's what makes this whole thing great. And that's why I don't feel nostalgic when it comes to, well, my last flight, I'm never going to be able to fly an airplane again. Well, an airliner. And because I know that what I do with the show and the community, that's so much greater to me right now than anything.
And I'd like to thank Jeff for joining our podcast. I'd like to thank you for listening. Again, I'm Paul. If you'd like to learn more about Icon Aircraft, just go to iconaircraft.com. And again, thanks for listening, everybody. And we'll catch you in the next one. Take care. Bye-bye.